Well, this sermon is going to be a little bit different today. I want to focus on the Old Testament story, a story that hasn't been told as much. Perhaps we know a little of it, but a story that I think needs to be told a little bit more, and that's the reason why I want to focus on it today. A story that is quite shocking. And to get our heads around the important dynamics of this Old Testament story in 2 Kings, I want to read it to you again. But before you go back in your bulletins and you start reading along with me, I'll warn you, I have changed it a little bit. Namely, I have updated the character names and a little bit of the situations to, I think, more closely align with how this story would be more shocking today and for us. So hopefully after reading this version, you will have a better understanding of what this story, I think, meant to the ancient people of Israel. And then after I read this story, I want some of your feedback, maybe a little bit. So don't be shy a little bit. We're going to change this up. Instead of barking at you like I do every week, I want you to think of the question after I read this story of what stuck out to you. What surprised you? And if you are comfortable, some of us are not, but if you are comfortable, feel free to say some of those things after I read, and we can have a little discussion about it. So, don't be afraid. Here we go. A reading from the book of 2 Kings, the 5th chapter. Vladimir Putin, president of the Russian Federation, was a great man and in high favor with his country, because by him, the Lord had given victory to Russia. The man, though strong, suffered from AIDS. Now there was a young Muslim girl whose mother was from the United States and whose father was from Russia. She worked as a housekeeper in the presidential palace and served Putin's wife. And she said to his wife, "If only President Putin were with the prophet Kevin, who is in Missoula, Montana. He would cure him of his AIDS and his disease." So President Putin sent President Barack Obama a message saying that he was coming to the United States. When President Obama got the message, he threw up his arms and said, "Am I God to give life or death that this man sends word to me to cure him of his AIDS? Just look and see how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me. In fact, he might be trying to invade the United States." But when Kevin heard on TV that President Obama was so worried, he sent him a message. "Why are you so afraid of Russia invading? Let Putin come to me, so that he may learn that there is a prophet here." Now, Kevin was a homeless man who was currently living in the Poverello Center because it was getting cold at nights and he could no longer sleep under the Reserve Street Bridge. So President Putin came, coming to Missoula in a private plane flanked by fighter jets, security guards, as well as a 50-car motorcade. He halted at the entrance of the Poverello Center. But instead of coming outside, Kevin sent President Putin a text saying, "Go wash in the manure pond on the Iverson Ranch 7 times, and your AIDS shall be healed, and you shall be clean." But Putin became angry and went away saying, "I thought that for me, he would surely come out. and stand and call in the name of the Lord his God, and would wave his hand over the spot and cure my disease. Are not the Columbia, the Madison, the Blackfoot, or the Clark Fork rivers better? Why in the world does he want me to wash in the same body of water that cows use to go to the bathroom? Could I not wash in another body of water and be clean? He turned and went away in rage. But his aides approached and said to him, "Sir, if the prophet had commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it? How much more then, when all he said to you was, 'Wash and be clean'?" So the president went down and immersed himself 7 times in the manure pond on the Iverson Ranch, according to the word of the man of God. And his AIDS was healed, and he was made clean. Then President Putin returned to Kevin, he and all of his company. He came and stood before him and said, "Now I know there is no God in all the earth except your God. Please accept a present from your servant." Here ends the reading. A little bit different of a take, isn't it? So, what surprised you, or why do you think I changed the characters the way I did? Perspective. Good. Absolutely. Right? Vladimir Putin isn't exactly on our list of top 10 best friends right now, is he? And the same was true with Naaman. Naaman was a general, very powerful one. And it's very true that the king of Israel was probably frightened, because here was this king, this enemy, coming to Israel to be cured. So it does give us a little perspective, doesn't it? What else surprised you in this story? That's right. AIDS has kind of a different thing to it in our society still today, right? Just like leprosy does, right? For people that have AIDS, we have isolated those in many, many ways. They become second-class citizens in a lot of ways, too. Just like the lepers of Jesus' time, of our Old Testament time, that became separate from the community. What else? Is there anything that challenges you in this story? The certainty of the cure. Oh, absurdity of the cure. Thank you. Yes. Washing in the manure pond at Iverson Ranch. I don't even know. Is Denny here? I don't even know if they have a manure pond. But here's the reason why I use that example, right? The Jordan River historically was tiny. Tiny, tiny, tiny. It was actually used by many, we have evidence actually, by many archaeologists of that river being used for farmlands. And when you go to Israel-Palestine, if any of you have been there, we think of the Jordan River as this mighty Mississippi-like body of water. But then you get there and you're kind of, it's dirty, it's silty, and it's about that big. So there's a reason why Naaman said, "Isn't there any other bodies of water that are close by?" Of course, even in ancient Israel, the Jordan River was just not very good. A not very good water. And here, yet, it still made Naaman clean. Isn't that absurd, right? Very absurd. And here's the thing that I think this story is so important to realize. You know, we take Jesus' command of the first shall be last and the last shall be first. And I think it becomes easy to separate ourselves from this. But when we read this story with current characters, it all of a sudden becomes a story, I think, to challenge us, is how do we see the first shall be last and the last shall be first? You know, all the power and the riches, in fact, in the story, the ancient Israel story, Naaman, the lectionary cut out a fraction of this story, but he came with the amount of gold that he came with to be healed was the largest measurement weight that we know about in ancient Israel, right? We think that what the measurement was, I forget what it, the exact number of it, but we think that actually Naaman came with something about the size of this room in gold, right? And so that's the absurdness of this story, is that Vladimir Putin comes with his big, powerful jets, his wealthy money, his estates, and yet none of that could do anything to solve his disease. A disease that isolated him in the story, of course, in a lot of ways. So there is something real important to how this, I think, shifts for us. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Who has power in this story? Kevin. Absolutely. Kevin. The person who lives under the bridge has more power than the president of Russia. And the Muslim housekeeper. In the ancient story, in the Old Testament, of course, this is a girl that was captured by raids that Naaman did to Israel. And so here's this woman, this girl, who's at the lowest of the low of society, but yet who's the one who points to God. Very, very interesting to think about. So, to sum up, and what I think is so real, is I hear a lot of times, even from some in my own family, you know, we talk about the God of the Old Testament being the God we don't really relate to, you know, that the Old Testament God we don't really associate with that type of God, right? We really are more inclined to accept the love and the peace of Christ, right, in the New Testament. But what I think this story forces me to think about is how that judgment in the Old Testament is not necessarily true. That the Old Testament God can be just as radical, just as loving, just as boundary busting as the God of the New Testament. And that's, for us, something to take heart, I think. I've mentioned before, you know, the word theology, theo in Greek meaning God, ology meaning to pronounce or to name, right? So theology, just at a basic sense, to be a theologian is just to be a God-namer, right? And this story names God in a very, very real way, in a very challenging way, and a way I think that we need to take heart in this election season, in this time of great divide between the haves and the have-nots. This is a story of naming God in surprising ways. Ways that sometimes we aren't comfortable with, ways that sometimes we don't really like, but yet ways that are important. And so the good news that I think is here is that the God of Israel is our God too. The God of Israel was Naaman's God, is Vladimir Putin's God. That's the God that I have hope in. That's the God that heals me. And that's the God I hope that as we go into a divisive time, we can think about more clearly in naming God in ways that are important, in ways that for the world, I think, needs to see. For that, I will say, Amen.